In other words, one of my names is Elijah David Mitchell, the 12th hour apostolic secretary and congregation, I was down at 12th hour in Libertyville, Texas. Today is September 10, 2017, or is evening 22, 2021. We will start our first service on this first day of the week with a song entitled, Is My Name Written There? Cannot for riches that is hither your goal, will it be sure that I never enter the fold? In the book of the kingdom, with its page wide and fair, for me I shall a Savior, is my name written there? Is my name written there on the page bright and fair? Let me ask of my Savior, is my name written there? Now my sins they are many, like the sands of the sea, but the blood of my Savior is sufficient for me. For the promise is written in bright letters that glow, though your sins be scarlet, I will make them like snow. My name written there on the page white and fair, in the book of the kingdom, is my name written there. Oh, the beautiful city, with its mansions of light, with its glorified beings in pure garments of white. No evil things come, it is forward, is said, when the angels are watching, is my name written there? Is my name written there? On the page bright and fair, tell me Yahshua, my Savior, is my name written? The world yesterday, today, and tomorrow. We're on page 25. The two horned beast. And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth. He had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. And he exercises all the power of the first beast before him, and he causes the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. Now we're reading on the tract number 12, The World Yesterday and Tomorrow by V.T. Hollis. And he doeth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying unto them that dwell on the earth, that they should make an image to the beast, which had the wound by the sword, and did live. He had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak, and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 603 score and 6. Revelation 13:11-18. for the power that is represented by this two-horned beast will identify itself with the false prophet. For together they are cast alive into a lake of fire, Revelation 19:20. From this it is plain to see that the wonders which the beast does in the sight of men, and by which he deceives them that dwell on the earth, Revelation 13:13-14, are wrought by the false prophet, Revelation 19:20, in the sight of the beast, Revelation 13:14. Clearly then, the beast's civil authority, combined with the prophet's supernatural power, points unto a nation of beasts, a union of beasts, and prophet, an affiliation of the state and of the church representatives. Having only two horns, not ten, the beast therefore depicts a local, not a universal government. Nevertheless, he will influence all Christendom to make an image to the beast, which had the wound by a sword and did live. That is, he will engineer a worldwide governmental setup, re-enthroning the principles of the church-state rule of the ecclesiastical Rome, and the restorer of these principles, he along with the prophet, will become the world's chief dictator, and shape not only the political and the religious policies of the government, but also the world's commerce. He shall decree that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Revelation 13:17. This beast represents a man who stands at the head of a nation and whose influence goes far and wide among the kings of the earth. He is further identified by a number, the mystical number 600, 666, Revelation 13:18. For the prevailing belief that the number 666 is the numerical identification of some other power is the spawn of the Prince of Darkness, and is calculated to conceal the possible identification of this two-horned power. The inspiration puts the number on the two-horned beast, and there we must leave it. When the number is finally made up, the servants of Yahweh will be able to convince all the wise as to just whom the beast symbolizes. We now see, though, that no one who studies the word of Yahweh need be deceived when this power does appear on the stage of the action. Yet notwithstanding, Yahweh's warning against giving allegiance to the beast, the world fails to give heed, with the result that even after his number is made up, he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads. Revelation 13:16. For the passage, if any man worship the beast in his image and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand, he knows that all who, after hearing the truth, continue to pay homage, either religiously or secularly, to the image, shall drink of the wine of the wrath of Yahweh, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation. Revelation 14:9-10. A full realization of the glorious reward that awaits mankind will even now compel men to shout for joy, and a like realization of the dreadful penalty that awaits all who fail to make Yahweh their refuge will cause them even now to weep and gnash their teeth, that all might realistically see these alternative prospects and be impelled thereby to repentance. Yahweh has been at supreme pains not only to record a graphic description of the evil which, through the instrumentality of the beast, Satan has determined upon the whole world, but also aforehand to make of a similar evil a perfect type of the image of the beast. The type was struck when Nebuchadnezzar, the king, made an image of gold, whose height was 70 cubits, and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent together the princes, the governors, and the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Then the herald cried aloud, "To you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, you fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up, and whoso falleth not down and worshipeth shall be the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace." Daniel 3:1-6. In the outworking of this drastic and unrighteous decree, there are three outstanding aspects. The first, womanly, reveals the manner in which the beast will compel all the nations and peoples within his dominion to worship him and the image which he shall make. The second sustainingly promises that just as in the Nebuchadnezzar's day, Michael delivered and promoted those who refused to worship the golden image, Daniel 3:12-30. So today will he deliver and promote all who refuse to worship the beast and his image. And the third door finally reveals that just as all who then stood faithful led a multitude of both high and low to acknowledge him as the Most High Yahweh, so today will all who heed the warning not to worship the beast or his image shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. Daniel 12:1-3. Hand in hand with history, and more sure of the prophecy having led us symbol by symbol down through the empires, beginning with the ancient Babylon and down into the present state, rule, a sectarian world, will certainly lead us through to the end of time. We are therefore confronted with the logical necessity of another beast symbol, one predicting the religious political world of tomorrow, without a symbolism to carry us beyond the world of today, the prophetic word of Yahweh would be incomplete. So, for the sake of logic, continuity, and completeness, this succession of the beast symbolism must include another beast, one which, in the particular, is to unveil the world of tomorrow. The only such symbol remaining is the scarlet-colored beast driven by Babylon the Great. And there came one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials, and talked with me, saying unto me, "Come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made a drunk with the wine of her fornication." So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman set up on a scarlet-colored beast, full of the names of blasphemy, having seven heads and 10 horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and a scarlet color, and decked with gold and precious stone and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of the abomination and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery Babylon the Great. The mother falleth an abomination of the earth. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Yeshua. When I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. And the angel said unto me, Wherefore didst thou marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman, and of the beast that carrieth her, which hath the seven heads and ten horns. The beast that thou sawest was, and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit, and go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth shall wonder whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is. And here is the mountain which hath risen. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. And there are seven kings. Five are fallen, and one is, and the other is not yet come. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth, and he is of the seven, and goeth into perdition. And the ten horns which thou sawest are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind, and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them. For he is the King of kings, and sovereign of sovereigns, and they that are with him are called, and chosen, and faithful. And he saith unto me, The waters which thou sawest, where the horse sitteth, are peoples, and multitudes, and nations, and tongues, and the ten horns which thou sawest upon the beast, he shall hate the whore, and shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh, and burn her with fire. For the Yahweh hath put in their hearts to fulfill his will, and to agree, and give their kingdom unto the beast, until the words of Yahweh shall be fulfilled. And the woman which thou sawest is that great city, which reigneth over the kings of the earth. Revelation 17. Now from the manifest similarity between the leopard-like beast and the scarlet-colored beast, one should recognize that the latter is of the image of the former. For his deadly wound having been healed, and his horns uncrowned, for the crownless horns of the latter show that he represents the world and a time when there are no crown kings, but that instead the world is ruled by an ecclesiastical head in the form of the woman that drives the beast. Moreover, the statement that the ten horns are symbols or representation of the are the ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, have received power as kings 1 hour with the beast, Revelation 17:12, positively imports that the crown kingdoms of the today that emerged from the fallen Rome, and that are represented by the crown horns of the leopard-like beast, will be uncrowned and dethroned. For the crownless horns of the scarlet-colored beast, moreover, have one mind, and give their power and strength unto the beast. Verse 13. This is our Democrats and Republicans in the Congress and the Senate at Washington, D.C. This is what they represent. They represent that power that gives that beast the new world order, represented by that woman, while the woman reigneth over the kings of the earth. So the Congress and the Senate land of the little two-horned beast that represents the two-party system, Democrats and Republicans. They give their power to this this beast system that is controlled and run by this woman. This woman is a symbol of churches. And she sits on the head, seven heads that represent all the churches collectively. Then she takes those seven heads and put on the beast, and then she sits on the beast. So it shows that we have finally come into the antipodal age of the church and state once again, like we had during the Dark Ages, with the Catholic Inquisition, with ecclesiastical Rome. Her sitting on the heads, verse 9, denotes that she is to control the churches, and her driving the beast denotes that she is to be the sovereign of the world. So why is she on the back of this beast, and why is she driving him? She's driving him all over the world. She's riding him all over the world. And she's driving him. So Mr. Babylon took power of the beast. And where was the beast's headquarters at? Washington, D.C. At the White House and at our governmental headquarters for this government. And so what do they do? That beast is called the Second Vatican. So that beast is represented by the Catholic Church, and the Pope is the mouthpiece for this beast, speaking to this woman, this church and state federation. Okay. So this beast takes on the form of a church organization with that woman riding its back, with those seven heads that represent all the Protestant churches around the world, including the Adventist Church, mixed in there with it. So it shows that the woman has made a church and state out of this beast, whereas before she mounted its back with those seven heads, the beast just had the 10 horns. In other words, the beast has taken him a bride, Mystery Babylon. He's married this woman. This is his bride. Okay. This system of worship and reign is not a new thing under the sun. For in her was found the blood of the prophet, and of the saints, and of all that were slain upon the earth. You can all see that beast identified there in the scriptures, especially in Revelation. It's got the masculine gender with the he. He has the male gender application. But when that woman mounts his back and takes control over him, then he takes on... And she's the one that's the mouthpiece for this beast, so it's become she, the beast. So it's a she beast. Mr. Babylon is a she beast. Whereas before she mounted the back of that beast, it was all called a he beast. Now she is a she beast. Revelation 18:24. She is therefore rightly called Babylon, the name of the oldest, the first world empire of the type. This antipodal Babylon, from which Elohim's people at this time are to be called out, is even to monopolize the world's commerce, as is clearly revealed in the prediction that when her reign ends, then shall the merchants of the earth weep and mourn over her, that no man buyeth their merchandise anymore. The merchandise of the gold and silver and precious stones, and of the pearls and fine linen and purple and silk and scarlet and all fine wood and all manner of vessels of ivory, all manner of vessels of most precious wood and of brass and iron and marble and cinnamon and odors and ointments and frankincense and wine, and oil, and fine flour, and wheat, and sheep and horses and chariots and slaves and souls of men. For the merchants of these things, which were made rich by her, shall stand afar off for the fear of her torment, weeping and wailing and saying, Alas, alas, that great city that was clothed in the fine linen and purple and scarlet and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, for in 1 hour so great riches is come to naught. And every shipmaster and all the company and ships and sailors and as many as trade by the sea stood afar off and cried when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, What city is like unto this great city? And they cast dust on their heads and cried, weeping and wailing, saying, Alas, alas, that great city, wherein were made rich all that had ships in the sea, by the reason of her costliness, for in 1 hour is she made desolate. Revelation 18, 11 to 13, and 15 through 19. So shortly after it is set up, this federation of the church and state will be plunged headlong into oblivion. Even after a great milestone, a millstone that is cast into the sea, in verse 21, and the cry of her mourners shall be, in 1 hour so great riches is come to naught, Revelation 17, 12, 18, 10, and 17. This hour which brings the death throes of Babylon can be none other than that which, according to the Yahshua's parable, Matthew 20, verse 11, 16, is the last parabolic hour, period of the day, of the probationary time. That would be in the 12th hour, this last parabolic hour. That is from the 11th hour call, at the end of the 11th hour for laborers, that will work the last message unto the world. That's the fifth angel's message, as well as the three angels' messages unto the Lord cry, Malachi 4 and 5, to the 12th hour, to the end of the 12th hour, sunset, ancient timepiece. That's the end of the day, the close of the gospel period. That's the 24:14. For the close of the harvest, Jeremiah 8:20. The close of the probation, Revelation 22:11. The 10 horns of the scarlet-colored beast. The ruler which she dominates for an hour, that's the 12th hour, that's the hour we're in now, ultimately shall make her desolate and naked and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire, Revelation 17:16. Well, this is a good time for us. We must be happy and celebrate that we're finally arrived to the 12th parabolic hour in time. It was thus at length they shall unseat her forever, and the system which she symbolizes, the image of the beast, shall be demolished. At this resounding crush of the Babylon, the chains of the earth shall bewail her and lament for her, stand afar off for the fear of her torment, saying, Alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, Revelation 18, 9 and 10. For the lamentation of the chains shows that they are sympathetic toward her, while the horn hate her. For the chains therefore cannot be those who are symbolized by the beast's crownless horn, but rather those who are symbolized by the crown horns of the leopard-like beast. For they are the crown kings who arose after the fall of pagan Rome. Okay, so it says, they are the crown kings who arose after the fall of the pagan Rome and who are now speedily going into exile. The identity of the Babylon being a much mooted subject, among students of the revelation, there arises therefore the necessity of the ascertaining who does Babylon personify. Alright, let's back up and do a little review of just what we just read. I'm going to reread Vitihara's comments that he made after I got through reading a while ago, just a few minutes ago, on Revelation 18, 11 to 13, and 15 to 19. Because he makes some things that I don't believe is exactly as accurate, is more accurate today than it was when he made these his comments. I'm going to read now on page 34. So shortly after it is set up, this federation of church and state, will be plunged headlong into oblivion. Okay, now, even as a great millstone that is cast into the sea. Verse 21. Well, this federation has already been set up here in the United States. This church and state has already been set up. This leopard-like beast that has the 10 crown horns on it, representing the kingdoms of the world that have their own independent rule, and they're represented by our Congress and Senate lawmakers as the representatives for these 10 horns worldwide. And let's go ahead and read now. Verse 21. And the cry of her mourners shall be, in 1 hour so great riches is come to naught. Revelation 17:12. Revelation 18:10-17. This hour which brings the death throes of Babylon. Alright, now, Babylon is in her death throes right now. For Donald Trump, and typical Cyrus, has overthrown Babylon. And he's got them in disarray and confusion. Okay, now, Babylon has got her merchants all over the world. And her merchants have really gotten rich. China, for instance, is one of her merchants. Well, China sends supplies 70% of the United States' goods that they use. Well, what would happen if that pipeline was cut off? What would happen if China suddenly had to stop sending those huge barges loaded with containers to our country through that Panama Canal that comes up first through Mexico? They drop off their cargo there, then they come to the United States and drop off their cargo here, then they go to Canada and drop off their cargo. So China has got a rich pipeline, and she's the heart of Babylon as much as anybody. But Babylon has her headquarters at Washington, D.C. And Obama was the last president of Babylon. And when Donald Trump became president and took his place, it signed the end of Babylon. That was the end of Babylon. Okay, Babylon hadn't given up, though. What would happen if those barges suddenly had to turn around in mid-ocean and go back to where they came from? Well, that would bankrupt China, and that would bankrupt the United States. And Donald Trump is just the man that caused that to happen. Because he said, China owes us billions and billions of dollars that they have stolen from us by an unfair trade deficit that we have incurred with trading with them. They have manipulated their money to where every time they make a big trade with us, they go back home and manipulate their money to where it engages stealing billions of dollars from the United States just by manipulating their money. So Donald Trump, he says, hey, we're going to have fair trade, or we're not going to have no trade. But China can't afford to have fair trade, because if they do that, they got so used to living on corruption and everything that they couldn't pay their bills if they had to have fair trade. So Donald Trump's going to insist on fair trade, and they're going to say, no, we're not going to do it. Then he's going to say, okay, then I'm going to put a blockade on your barges coming across the ocean to these fair shores of the United States. I'm going to put a stop on it, and either you pay up, or you just drown in your own red ink. Okay? So this is where we're at. Okay, it says, in 1 hour, so great riches has come to naught, here in the 12th hour. Okay? The United States, the scripture says there's no end to her treasuries. Because we have a bottomless pit when it comes to exalting our treasury. Seems like they just invent money out of thin air and always got billions of dollars for anything that they need it for. So, when Donald Trump insists on fair trade, then that is when you're going to have a bankruptcy of Mexico, China, Canada. They're going to all go bankrupt because they all live on graft, on unequal trade deals with the United States, number one. So that's in Revelation 17:12. Revelation 18:10. This hour, this 12th periodic hour we're in now, which brings the death throes of Babylon, can be none other than that which, according unto the Yeshua's parable, Matthew 20, verse 11 to 16, is the last periodic hour, period of the day, probationary time, that is, from the end of the 11th hour, which ended in 2003 at Clement, Texas, call for laborers. That's your fifth group of laborers. That's called in Matthew 20, verse 6. And that's your last group that are called at the end of the 11th hour to work in the 12th parabolic hour. And we know because Yeshua was there in Clement 2002-2003, and he brought Clement to a close. Closed out the 11th parabolic hour and hard the laborers that were standing idle in the marketplace fell. And that happened to be my wife and I. We were the laborers that was earmarked to take the reins in the 12th parabolic hour. And so we were hard there and had to come out from under and be separate. And we had to be brought to a whole new location to set up a new kingdom and so forth. And this is where we're at now. So, this last hour, the 12th parabolic hour, is the last message for the world, Malachi 4:5. To the 12th hour sunset, until the end of the 12th hour sunset, ancient time phase, the end of the day. For the end of the day is the end of the 12th parabolic hour, not the beginning, but the end of the 12th parabolic hour. For the close of the gospel period, Matthew 24:14. For the close of the harvest, Jeremiah 8:20. For the close of probation, Revelation 22:11. Okay, it says, for the 10 horns of the scarlet colored beast, parentheses, the rulers which she dominates for an hour. So, the woman dominates these 10 horns, these trade merchants of Babylon, for 1 hour. That's here in the 12th parabolic hour. Ultimately, shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. Why do they eat her flesh and burn her with fire? Why do they turn on her like that? Well, what happened was, she stole their money. She gave them some products, but she stole their money. In other words, she gave them less products, and she got more money for less products, and finally they ran out of products. And they didn't have no more money to pay her for the products that they was getting from her. And so the defender came up and he says, I'm putting a stop to this unequal trade deficit with China. So he cuts China off, and the merchants that have, let's go ahead and read it. Revelation 17 and 16. Thus at length they shall unseat her forever. And the system which she symbolizes. But isn't that wonderful to know that all these here communist red rule nations that are so dishonest, they're so crooked, they're so evil, they're going to be brought to an end. It says, and the system which she symbolizes, the image of the beast. Shall be demolished. At this resounding crash of Babylon, the kings of the earth shall bewail her and lament for her, standing afar off for the fear of her torment, saying, alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, Revelation 18, 9 and 10. Okay. So now, where is this Babylon city at? She's burning. Where is she at? She's in Washington, D.C. So all the merchants of the world are lamenting for Babylon because they're seeing she's being destroyed and she's on fire there at Washington, D.C. Did you know that we had our White House burnt down once before here in the United States? Nobody ever talks about it, but I believe that was about 1855. I need to get my story straight on that, but I believe Great Britain is the one that that sacked it, that burned it. Great Britain is the one that tried to destroy our flag in Philadelphia by bombarding it, and they bombarded it all night. And they demanded that if the people didn't want to die in that fort, just all they had to do was lower that flag, that would automatically signal a surrender to Great Britain, and Great Britain would take over the United States without firing a shot. So, that didn't happen, but Great Britain has been our number one enemy ever from the time the country was born. England. Great Britain is our number one greatest enemy. And who is the first country that Donald Trump met and made a deal with? Great Britain. This woman that rules Great Britain. Okay. So let's continue on, page 35. The lamentations of the king show that they are sympathetic toward her, while the horns hate her. Now, this is contradictory, because these kings that show that they are sympathetic toward her, while the horns hate her. So Vicky Hartiff is saying that the ten horns are now something else other than these here ten kings. But these ten horns represent these ten kings. So if the ten kings stand alone here, well then who do these ten horns represent? See, Vicky Hartiff, he doesn't know. And so let's see if we can find out anything here. For the kings therefore cannot be those who are symbolized by the beast's crownless horns. Correction, the White House burned October the 14th, August the 14th, 1814. Okay. We had the War of 1812 with Britain, but they wouldn't stop. They burnt down the White House in 1814. Couldn't get them out of this country. Let's continue. But rather, those who are symbolized by the crown horns of the leopard-like beast, that's who are Republicans and Democrats and lawmakers at Washington, D.C., Congress, and the Senate, that's who they represent. These are 10 crown horns on this leopard-like beast. But these 10 crown horns, Donald Trump has taken their horns off. And then when he gets through taking their horns off, then they will represent the 10 crownless without no horns on their scarlet colored beast of Revelation 17. Whereas they represent the 10 crown horns on the leopard-like beast of Revelation 13. But when Donald Trump knocks their horns off, or the crowns off their horns, then that's when it shows that they are representing the 10 horns on that beast of Revelation 17, the scarlet colored beast. The crown horns, they're on the leopard-like beast. The uncrowned horns are on the scarlet colored beast of Revelation 17. They are the crown kings who arose after the fall of pagan Rome, those with the crown, and who are now speedily going into exile. Well, as they go into exile, they lose their crowns. But these 10 horns are the same as these 10 kings. There's no 10 separate horns and 10 separate kings, separate from each other. For the identity of Babylon being a much mooted subject among students of the Revelation, there arises therefore the necessity of the ascertaining who does Babylon personify. Now that the light has completely dispelled the darkness which has long enveloped this subject, the student of the prophecy can plainly see from the symbolism that in the first place Babylon personifies the forthcoming ecclesiastical, political, economic system of the nations, not some institution or organization. Second, that the beast she drives is a figure of her dominion. And third, that it is about to pass from prophecy into history. Right now, it's passing from prophecy into history. Right now. Donald Trump is causing that to happen. Indeed. It's already beginning to loom up out of the haze, as did the shores of America for Christopher Columbus and his companions as they approached the great western continent. For the beast being driven by the woman, Babylon clearly reveals three important truths. First, that the call of Yahweh's people to come out of Babylon, Revelation 18:4, is a call for them to come out from among the nations. See, this call to come out of Babylon is a call for the remnant, Yahweh's people, to come out of all those foreign nations that are symbolized by the beast which she is driving, ruling. Second, that the called ones are to come out from her sin-filled dominion, because it is to be ruined by the plagues. So when you see the remnant coming out, and that call is going to be made by this purified kingdom that Elijah David has set up here in Liberty Hill, Texas, when it develops into 144,000 sinless individuals that are prophets, priests, and kings, and being empowered to call these people out of Babylon, and they will answer the call, and then that will be a sign that all trading with all nations is over. This righteous nation will not trade with Babylon no more. So that's when the Babylon will officially fall again, when the righteous are called out of her and they'll make their way to these shores here in America, And then all trade is suspended from all nations. All trade is suspended. And all wicked are out of here. This the United States is going to be the only one place, and it's going to be all the righteous are going to be here. All the wicked here are going to be destroyed, or they're going to flee back to their stronghold, get out of this country. And then all the righteous are going to be called out of all those wicked nations here in this country. And this is when you're going to have a true utopia once again in the United States. This is in the process of being set up right now. And third, their coming out necessitates their going into a place where sin does not exist. And so where's the call coming from? It's coming right here from the United States of America. And it's where they're going to be called into, a place where sin does not exist. And where there is no danger of the plagues falling. Thus, their coming out of her dominion must be their going into the Yahweh's kingdom. And Yahweh's kingdom, the headquarters, will be set up right here in Judah, like it was in Israel at the time. The kingly palace ground, where David's throne is set up. Then the warning against receiving the mark, Revelation 14:9-11, along with the call to come out, will be repeated with an exceeding loud cry throughout Babylon's dominion. Both those who find themselves in her dominion and those who find themselves out of it must then immediately decide to receive the seal of Yahweh instead of the mark of the beast if they want to escape the wrath of Yahweh. To do this, the former class must come out of her, and the latter class must stay out of her, despite the death penalty for taking such a stand, Revelation 13:15. There must be no hesitancy or indecision on the part of either class. Well, then how are the people going to live in this country if you have all righteous people, and these people are not going to be making weapons of war? They're not going to learn war anymore. They're going to have peace and safety. They got to eat. Are they going to go down to the grocery store and buy up all that chemicalized food and all that unclean food? No. What are they going to eat? They're going to eat manna from heaven again, like they did in the wilderness in the time. Because they were definitely going to be in the wilderness of the people. It says so in Ezekiel 20, verse 33 to 40. Okay? Those who are in Babylon must heed the voice which says, come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins, and that you receive not of her plague. Revelation 18:4. And those who are out must carefully heed the warning, if any man worship the beast in his image and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of Yahweh, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation. And he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb, Revelation 14:9-10. The light on this subject was spread as fire in the stubble until it finally illuminates the whole earth, Revelation 18:1. And all who walk in its blaze will have their names placed in the Lamb's Book of Life. They will find deliverance from the enemy's last determined effort to plunge the world into the bottomless pit of the eternal ruin. For them, said the angel, shall Michael stand up, the great prince who standeth for the children of thy people. And at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book, Daniel 12:1. Okay, let's remember, this deliverance started at the Kermit, Texas, 2002. It started with three people being delivered at that time. Only three people, but that's enough to start a new kingdom with. And that's exactly what happened. Yahweh's new everlasting kingdom. And so, that deliverance started there. And it's hard to believe that all the faces that I saw down at Trumpet for 33 and a half years, all the people that I met, believing that we was all going to end up together in the end time, and yet their faces have passed away and off the scene, never to be seen anymore, and the place has been planed off, so to speak. Gilead Center will never be anymore, forever gone. And it's hard to believe that Willis Johnson, that I saw face to face for 33 years, that I will never see his face again, ever. And Laura May's face, or any of them, all of my former brothers and sisters that ended up hating each other, or they hated us, will never see their face again. When I go down here among these Gentile churches and I look on their faces, I look at all those people, and I says, you know, whole churches are going to be obliterated. When the message has been taken, I've taken the message to these churches down here, and they flat out rejected it. The Methodists and Baptists, I've taken to them. Four or five of these churches, they just flat out rejected it. Well, one of these days, they're not going to be anymore. They're going to be planned off. Well, anyway, we're getting close to the end of our stay for this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call. And if number 11, click on our audio archive. We're going to close this study now with a song. Don't let that shit sail by the light of day.
Don't let the ship sail by while standing on the shore. The captain of that mighty ship is standing by the door to welcome all to come aboard. There's a room for many more. As the ship sets sail for the harbor, lights up that far off distant shore. Don't let that ship sail by, don't let that ship sail by, for she has a pain for the livery in the sky. For the saints of all ages are riding her on high. So don't get caught standing there when that lighted harbor, silver ships in the sky. Never dreamed of thunder sailing deep as that sweet by and by. Yes, I dreamed about those mansions Yah has gone to prepare. Never dreamed of thunder beating the lungs in the air. Don't let that ship sail by, don't let that ship sail by, for she has a payload to give her in the sky. For the saints of all ages are riding her on high. So don't get caught standing there when that ship goes sailing by. Don't let that ship sail by while standing on the shore. Cover up the sand and the room for many more. For the captain of that mighty ship is standing by the door. For the welcome all the time before destination and shore.